It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Total Schemers Podcast. My name is Simo. Today, I'm joined by Jake. Say hello, Jake.
Hi, guys. Welcome back.
And we're also joined by Adam.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're part of the team now, Adam, so you no longer need to thank us. We've snapped at you, as it was planned. As it was planned all along, when all those episodes ago when we had you on as a guest. As usual, this show is brought to you by Manscaped for 20% off and free shipping at the checkout code SCREAMERS20. We're just going to jump straight into this, guys. If you don't know, we are recording this on a Tuesday. We normally do it on a Monday. We have Champions League games fast approaching, so if we're rushing through any games, you can blame it on a poor performance, not getting a show done on a Monday night. Let's start with the notional sort of five rubber of the weekend, the Chelsea Man City, which turned out to be a pretty boring game from my point of view. I thought Chelsea were absolutely dreadful this game. I thought it came out of pure left field for me. I thought they didn't line up in a way that I would expect them to. I think go with the two forwards instead of sort of that front three that they kind of normally do with the two sort of sitting midfielders. Didn't really. I think it kind of played right into Man City's hands. Couldn't come to you first, Adam. What were your thoughts on the match as a whole?
I mean, I think probably most people are in agreement that it took a while for this one to get exciting. The first half was just an absolute snooze fest.
It was.
Again, I think as usual, though, Man City just there's never really going to be a game, I don't think, where Man City don't dominate Chelsea or anyone for that matter, but especially a team that sets up like Chelsea, in terms of they were just looking to strangle them from minute one. And sort of keep them penned into their own box. Obviously got a bit livelier in the second half. I think the goal changed everything. I think for me, though, I think the big takeaway is if I was Thomas Tuchel, I'd be looking at this game thinking maybe we should slightly adjust the way we play here. I know obviously it's worked up until this point, but you saw as soon as Chelsea started trying to play those long balls into Lukaku, to then put Werner away when they were sort of desperate for the goal, they were getting through a lot. And because obviously City, we all know, City pressed so high up the pitch.
I think that was a disappointing thing about it for me, Adam.
Yeah, every time Chelsea actually went for that long ball, they were getting the two-on-twos every time. Obviously ended up creating a goal from it that was just offside. But yeah, I think if I was Thomas Tuchel, I'd be looking at that thinking there could be a potential way to beat teams like City or even like Liverpool, for example.
He's got a fantastic record against Pep in recent history. I don't know why he adjusted his normal... Well, I think he adjusted his normal approach in terms of... I don't think the outball was as normally the outball as Chelsea have played City in recent times has been to incredible pace. Like Timo Werner, the likes of that. But Lukaku, although I think he is quite a deceptively fast player, he's not of the pace of Timo Werner, who plays right in the shoulder, and it's all about trying to get away from my man. It's not really about trying to wrestle. He's way by the man. I think they probably should have went with the sort of, you know, the 3-4-3 sort of setup as they've adapted to. And I think they would have had a wee bit more joy with that. In the second half, where Chelsea did come out a little bit and be a wee bit more positive, I thought, you know, why not start like this? You know, why not start like this? I feel like I feel like you lost the match in the first half. I felt like if there was two goals in this game, one apiece, then there would have been probably five or six in this game. One of those that I think a couple of goals that would have really got this game going. Jake, give us your thoughts, mate.
I thought it was a really good performance from City, to be honest. I thought defensively they looked really, really good. They looked really strong. And there's been a lot of talk about Chelsea this season as being the ones to beat. And I think City's shown exactly why they're not to be underestimated this season, even though they don't have an out-and-out number nine, as everyone says. But I thought City's defensive game, as boring as it sort of is, was excellent. You know, Pep seems to have learnt from the last time that they've played Chelsea and the time before that, when, you know, they were beaten quite comfortably in both games. But, you know, I think Thomas Tuchel probably didn't help. You know, I thought his midfield was quite a strange one. He had Kovacic, Jorginho and Kante, all very defensive-minded players.
Yeah, not really that out-ball. The immediate out-ball.
Yeah, exactly. That was the one that
the Mason Mount, Kai Havertz sort of...
Yeah.
The dynamic of that leading on to a Timo Werner or a Ziyech or something like that.
I can see what he was trying to do. You know, he knows that Man City midfield's full of creativity, so he wants to stifle that as much as he can. But ultimately, I think he stifled his own side by making himself... his team more negative. That's the way I sort of saw it. And Werner and Lukaku, obviously, you know, they've not played much together up top as a pair, so their partnership isn't quite there. But I thought Lukaku was poor again against another big side. You know, he was poor against Liverpool, and he was poor again here against Manchester City. So hopefully they'll want him to start finding the net against the so-called bigger sides. Because the sooner they do that, the better it'll obviously, the more it'll help Chelsea out as well.
I think you've got to bang on. I think Pep does need to get the props for getting his tactics perfect for this game. Perfect clean sheet and a win against the arguably the favourites for the league next to his side is any result you could have asked him for, that would probably be at 1-0, wrapped up nice and neat and tidy. Yeah, I do think that Tuchel going sort of like trying to go man for man in the midfield was a mistake. We don't ever try and win the battle in midfield against Man City. We just tackle hard in the midfield and try and escape through the wide areas and don't even try and play through it. You know? And because, you know, Man City do have, in my opinion, the best midfield in the world and the best depth from a midfield point of view. So yeah, I think Tuchel is maybe a little bit naive, but this is still a new-ish kind of outfit at Chelsea, and this will be a lesson learned for Tuchel, and he does seem like a coach that does learn lessons from his defeats. So I think the next time City and Chelsea play will be a bit of an interesting one. I want to go next to Manchester, where Manchester hosted Aston Villa and were fairly dreadful, and were defeated 1-0, and our beloved Billy isn't on the podcast to tell us about it, how dreadful for us. In his place, with all his enthusiasm, Jake, give us your assessment of this match.
Do you know what, mate? I had a little look at the stats before the start of the game, and, you know, United had 28 shots in this game. 28 shots, they had 4 on target, which, you know... It's baffling, isn't it? And then obviously the big...
That's a Wolves conversion rate, that.
It is. And obviously the big talking point was that horrific Bruno Fernandes miss. Awful penalty.
Still going, apparently, mate. Still going somewhere in Manchester.
Apparently it's sort of... It's just sort of collecting things now, and it's sort of forming its own sort of ecosystem. But I thought Villa were bang on the money for the win. I thought it was a good performance. And I think, you know... Courtney House deserved that as well, didn't he? You know, he seems like a nice lad, and Dean Smith deserved it. But yeah, the thing for United that sort of concerns me, doesn't concern me as a Liverpool fan, but, you know, as a neutral on this podcast, is for all their attacking talent, it's just not clicking for them. You know, they've got Ronaldo, Cavani, Sancho, Greenwood, Rashford when he's fit. It's just Pogba, you know, probably a couple of others, but you look at those names and you think you should be comfortably scoring goals, and they're just really not finding form. I think Gary Neville said it correctly after the game, was, you know, they do seem like a team of individuals. They don't seem like a cohesive unit yet. And is Solskjaer the man to make that based on what we've seen so far? Probably not. You know, he's got arguably one of the best attacking teams in the world, and they're struggling, in my opinion. They've not looked comfortable at all this season. So I'm not sure what they need to do to get the best out of those attackers, but clearly what they're doing now isn't working.
Well, the Man United board have came out and they unequivocally back Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, which is great news for the Liverpool fans. although I think there was plenty of shots taken by Man United, but I think the Villa chances were quality chances, and they definitely deserved a goal in this fixture. Man United, it could be argued that they probably deserved a goal. I mean, it does look like a team of sort of quality individuals. Mm-hmm. And they're very much lacking in the deeper areas midfield. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, actually, he's been awake to this criticism, came out in the media and said that he loves the midfield of Scott McTominay and Fred. And I don't necessarily think Scott McTominay is the problem in this situation. Mm. Before this week's fixtures, I've not checked the stats since this match week, but before that, there was no player in the Premier League that was dribbled past more than Fred. And that's a hard stat. That's not like an observing of watching a player and you think, well, he doesn't really look as if he's stating any claim just in the eye test to be in this Man United side. That's a hard stat that says, right, okay, there's a problem in that midfield, because he is a sitting midfielder on a box-to-box sort of moving around, getting in the way of people is his general job. But there's problems at Man United, but they don't look as if too far away with maybe, you know, a decent defensive sort of midfielder. And that's what Adam changes was
crying, everything. Crying out. Well, for, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, though, from what I've seen of them so far, I don't even know if that changes anything. I really don't. Like, under Solskjaer, they are, and I think they have been for a couple of years now, they're just a team of, as you said, of individuals. Like, it is very much...
Aren't they?
Yeah, and I think when Solskjaer was asked not too long ago about his style of play and his philosophy, he said something along the lines of, you know, he wants to sort of hit teams fast on the break, play counter-attacking football, and then sort of leave it up to the quality of his attackers to create something. And just from him saying that, you sort of realise there's no actual clear plan. Like, once they get the ball to the forwards...
Quite
there's
vague,
no real idea of it? How to create chances.
very, very,
you see, because literally over the last year, maybe 2 years, they've literally been like moments FC. It's like they create just little bits of magic and that will see them through games. And because I think you look at this Villa game, and it's no surprise to anyone really. I think it's been coming. You'd see the performances they've put in. Mm. And I mean, you referenced their 28 shots, Jake. If you actually look at the distance some of them are from, in fact, most of them are from, it's like they quite literally are just, it's, can I find Ronaldo? If I can, yes, Ronaldo shoots. If I can't, I'm just going to shoot from 30 yards myself and we'll just hope it goes in.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see this a lot with Man United this season. Like, sometimes it's going to happen for them. For example, the Wolves game, they were battered for, what was it, like 80 minutes. Greenwood gets a lucky break, scores a goal. Sometimes it's going to go for them. Other times in the Villa game, these outrageous shots and sort of just hoping that the talent gets them through alone, it's not going to go for them, and they're going to drop more points like this season.
I don't think that's the approach that wins titles. But you never know. We're still quite early on in the season. Quick start for you there to just back up what Adam was saying. No player is averaging more shots per game than Cristiano Ronaldo this season. So which goes on to sort of emphasise the Man United reliance on him, even though they do have quite a deep forward line. We next go to I was going to say some sort of derby, but the name of it escapes me. Leicester, Burnley. Yes, Jamie Vardy had a hat-trick. One of them was an own goal, but he had a hat-trick. I'm sure he took home the ball. Known as shithousery. I'm going to come back to you, Adam. Thoughts on the Leicester-Burnley game?
I think it's another game where you're looking at Leicester thinking they're actually in a bit of trouble now. I can't quite remember where they are in the table, but they've lost more than they've won still. I think they're still in that sort of like negative record. And Burnley are a team that, I mean, look, they can always look to sort of stifle the top teams and to really, I guess, like nullify the attack of top teams, you know, be a real pain to play against. But I actually think from what I saw, I didn't watch the whole game. I just saw the highlights, but from what I actually saw, Burnley, for the most part, kind of went toe-to-toe with Leicester, and and they didn't really seem afraid to actually try and get at them.
Leicester were very fortunate to take anything away from this game, given the Chris Wood offside goal, which was very, very tight. I mean, one of those VAR decisions where I kind of feel like they were going to be eradicated this season. but yeah, Leicester very fortunate to take anything away from the game at home.
Yeah, no, I again completely agree, and as I was saying, I think Burnley were very brave. I think we saw a different side to Burnley actually. We saw it a little bit against Liverpool as well, where they weren't afraid to sort of commit bodies forward and press a little bit, and it was quite nice to see the fact that they can change their style of play away from home in a manner like that, and actually get something from a team like Leicester. So I think it's commendable. I just wanted to praise Burnley for a minute there.
I think Kenan does go out under the radar, and Tifo Football actually released a video recently on a breakdown of Burnley's tactics, which is great, and everybody should go watch it if you're interested in the philosophy behind Sean Dyche's approach to football, getting the most out of a team that virtually spends nothing and potentially what's known as the most competitive league in the world. And it's all about compressing the pitch and making the pitch smaller and winning the aerial duels high up the pitch. And for a statistic for you, no team wins more aerial duels in the Premier League than Burnley, who win approximately 25 per match, winning 25 aerial duels at the minute per match, which is quite significant.
It's a big journey.
Big jump in on the next team, which I believe is 18. So it's quite a stretch from the number two place. Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one for Leicester. Not only Leicester, for the past sort of, I want to say, three seasons, start overly well. They start and they'll nail down like a second, third and fourth place for a long old time, and then they'll burn out near the end of the season. I don't think this bodes particularly well for Leicester starting the season in this manner. I mean, for a club that's succeeding consistently and getting European football consistently in the Premier League, I think there are a few adjustments. There's things that are happening to Leicester in terms of earlier. James Maddison has struggled with injuries more recently than in previous seasons. Jamie Vardy is aging, although he does get a pretty pacey goal away in this match. But I think they maybe could be on the verge of entering just a little bit of a transitional period where they maybe need to invest just in the more ready-made players rather than the close to it but and could make it kind of players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a few boos as well, wasn't there? Full-time. I think they were aimed towards Brendan Rodgers as well, so
I wouldn't like to see the fans getting on his back. I mean, you know, he's just won the FA Cup and the Community Shield, and I think it'd be premature for them to start booing them because, you know, they're not, like you said, Simmer, they're not in that top four immediately.
But credit to Burnley for getting a good point, and Maxwell Cornet looked good player.
I think it goes a long way, especially the FA Cup. It will go a long way for a team like Leicester. You saw how much it meant to them to win it. I think it definitely buys Brendan Rodgers at least a year. Let's say they do continue to be disappointing this year. I think it buys him that.
I mean, his recent success, I think it's, if there was a word that precedes premature, I think that's what I'm doing. The thing is, maybe just a very small minority of support with very, very short memories, given that Brendan Rodgers had a fairly positive tenure in charge of Leicester. We next go to Rafa Benitez, Everton, who played an extremely poor Norwich side. You fear for Norwich this season, whether they're going to get any points in the board at this point. They'll look ever so poor in defence. I just don't think they're very much playing with a championship defence in this Premier League, and every team is looking to exploit it. Even Rafa Benitez was very much in the mind of overloading their defence in certain areas of the pitch, knowing that there would be a breakthrough. Jake, I'm going to come to you. Do you fear for Norwich this season in terms of getting any points in the board at all?
Massively. We spoke about it, I think, before the start of the season, and I think we all pretty much had Norwich nailed down immediately to go straight back down. And they are that yo-yo club, aren't they? You know, they come up, they get the money, they're quite happy with that, and then they'll happily go down knowing that the next season they'll be in the mix again to come up. So it must be frustrating for their fans to know that they're not going to give it a go like a Burnley or someone like that just to try and stay in this league for a few years. It must be really frustrating, but routine win for Everton in the end. You know, Andre Gray and Damari,
Andros Townsend.
Andre Gomez and Damari Gray. He got them back once, buddy.
Andros Townsend and Damari Gray, though, for Everton. Speaking about them, they look really good. I think Rafa's really good at making things happen on a shoestring budget, and obviously Ancelotti's spending pre-Rafa has made them tighten the purse strings a little bit. Obviously, we've seen a few of those players not do very well, James Rodriguez being the key one, but Rafa seems to be doing good. Silencing the Boo Boys at the start of the season there, and his cheap signings look really good. And Damari Gray, by the way, 1.5 million they signed him for. What a signing he's been to them. Unbelievable.
It's not even some players' wages for the month, to put that exactly. in context.
Yeah, I think he's been really good. And Townsend's looked sharp as well. And Decore looked like he's had a new lease of life, a lot of breathed into him under Rafa. So I think for Everton it's going to be an interesting season. I can't see them finishing in Europe, but if they show positive signs under Rafa, I think that'll probably please a lot of the Everton fans. I know my cousin who's a season ticket holder at Everton, he's massively come round to Rafa being the gaffer there. So
yeah. You know, I always knew this was going to happen, that Rafa would get there.
Yeah.
Do Rafa things, and they would kind of be like, you know what, this is all right. This, and speaking on Decore, Jake, I don't think I've ever seen a midfielder that is as much a Rafa Benitez midfielder as Decore.
Yeah, he's such a Rafa player, isn't he?
He's such a Rafa player. He's like you said, Rafa Benitez. He will only. He's not. He doesn't massively spend big. I think he would if it was the right player, but he generally doesn't see any value to players that don't offer an immediate improvement or a rotational option. Hence, you see the likes of James Rodriguez departing to Qatar, where I'm sure he's getting paid plenty of money. So enjoy your Twitch streams while you take some time off. Adam, did you have any thoughts to add?
Apart from, again, I really worry for Norwich. I think especially after Daniel Farke came out saying that this year Norwich are smarter, they've got a new way of playing, and they're going to look to try and stay in the Premier League. And I haven't seen an ounce of any sort of change. It's really, really disappointing for to be a Norwich fan. I think every other year. I think that's all I have to add, really.
I think the ownership
so,
came
like
out.
Jake said, so routine.
Ownership came out a couple of... in recent times and said they're pretty much happy being a top 26 club.
Yeah.
And just kind of yo-yoing in between and collecting that sort of 100 million you get from being in the Premier League for a season. Disappointing for Norwich fans, because they must feel like every time they do get a promotion, it must just feel like a bit of a false dawn. And whether they can have any sort of real faith in the side. I mean, Billy Gilmour and Brandon Williams isn't going to be, although they're great prospects, isn't going to be enough to keep you in this league. They should have bought at the back. They should have bought big time at the back. Grant Hanley, I don't really like ripping on any sort of Scottish players in the Premier League, because I do love seeing any Scottish player playing in any abroad league from Scotland, but he's just not Premier League fit. He's nowhere near it. We'll see. And Rafa does continue an extremely positive start at his time at Everton, having him playing some really positive football. We next go to Leeds United, who hosted West Ham. West Ham got over the line again. It was a really, really sort of close fixture, really competitive fixture. It was very Leeds United in terms of their willingness to relentlessly attack for a 90-minute period. Rafinha looked absolutely superb in this match, but West Ham just showed a wee bit of extra quality. They seemed to keep improving all over the pitch. Adam, give us your thoughts in this fixture.
I think firstly, just to touch on West Ham, Antonio being back is massive. Huge. For them, isn't it? Like, I think we saw, obviously, against who was it they played? Manchester United, it was, when Antonio was obviously missing. And you felt that even though they were tiring, they still maybe could have got something out of that game. And I think Antonio is that difference. If he was there, I think it probably would have been a different story. And it kind of was, like you touched on, Rafinha for Leeds. I think in this game, the two big standouts were Rafinha and Antonio, sort of leading the way for their teams in this fixture. We touched on how important Rafinha can be for Leeds. I think it was early on in the season. I think it was for a Liverpool preview. And I was saying he's just, in my opinion, at least anyway, he's like a cut above any other winger or even player that Leeds have, really. I think Dan James came on. I think he came on as a sub, or he might have started, I can't remember. But Dan James played on the other side. He played on the left-hand side. And I thought he was not great. He was obviously sort of dealing with Koufal and Jared Bowen, who I thought both had very decent games for West Ham. I thought West Ham, they looked to control the game in a way that you see the bigger clubs control games against Leeds. Obviously, Leeds tend to, they like to have quite scrappy games, don't they? They like to, they like to get you one on one everywhere on the pitch. And sort of try, I guess, try and make it some sort of goal fest. West Ham, I thought, to be honest, I think 2-1 was probably quite flattering for Leeds. I think West Ham could have gone and got another few. As I said, I think they controlled the game like they were a sort of top four, top six team. And for the most part, like I said, apart from a few moments from Rafinha, just nullified Leeds in all sense of the words.
I very much agree with you, and I think this is a good test for West Ham in terms of matching their players against players that are going to want to impress with intensity and match them in those one-on-one duels and battles. But this West Ham team is full of genuine talent, genuinely, you know, top-level players that are just there to, extremely ambitious players that want to be up playing in Europe and competing amongst those larger Premier League clubs. But yeah, all good things in West Ham. And I think Leeds struggling a bit more this season than they were last season. And it's going to be a long old season. I know they've kept every game, virtually every game, minus a couple, tight.
It's only the second time in their history that they've not won any of their first six games. The last time was 1935.
Worrying indeed.
You know, Do you think it possibly is worrying for them?
Because I know a lot of people spoke about, obviously they did well last season, and a lot of people were saying second season syndrome won't affect Leeds because of how fit all of the players are, obviously playing that Bielsa way. Do you think it is second season syndrome kicking in, or...?
No, I think it's just a numbers game. I really do think it's just in another time that I think a lot of those chances that Leeds have had, because they are extremely creative and extremely forward thinking, they just don't seem to be dropping this season for them. And I think they do edge a couple of these tight fixtures. So I think they actually probably, if a couple of things went Leeds' way this match, then maybe we're talking about a different result here. But yeah, I don't see them go down or anything like that. But
no.
In terms of when you play this way week in, week out, it's just sometimes it goes for you, sometimes it goes against you, and we're just in a period where it seems to be going against them. And I'm sure
Is he injured? He's out for a while, is he?
I'm not sure how long. He wasn't in the match squad. I think Jamie Shackleton moved to left back or something like that. I'm not sure. I didn't watch the full 90 minutes of where he moved there at some point in the game. But yeah, it's I'm sure Marcelo Bielsa will find a way to sort of resolve this, and Leeds will probably. I'm predicting a Leeds good patch at some point as they maybe face some of the more tired Premier League sides that can't match their intensity. But obviously, at the start of the season, every player and every team's raving to go. You know, we're not quite any really cold games in November and December, so we'll see how the teams are matching against Leeds in that period. We next go to the match that nobody asked for. Watford, Newcastle. One each, as you would expect. A lot of Newcastle fans still upset with Steve Bruce and the way he lines a side up. I'll come back to you, Adam. What were your thoughts on the fixture?
I mean, as you said, it was the game no one really asked for. I feel like there's not too much to say about this game. I think everybody would probably be pretty much unanimous in a 1-1 or a 0-0 in terms of predicting this one. I thought there was a few decent individual performances again. Alan said maximum for Newcastle always.
He's far too good in that side, isn't he?
It's the only good thing about far Newcastle, you think about that side and Newcastle. Real trouble. Yeah. And Joseph Bullock. I think Arsenal will have to get rid of. I highly rate him.
Just going to touch on him as well. I think Saint-Maximin and Willock definitely stood out for me in terms of, again, I guess similar to Rafinha at Leeds, I referenced that. I think they're just a cut above everybody else in that team, to be honest. And for Watford, Joshua King did all right. Obviously, Sarve's always a threat. I think he was the one that got the goal, wasn't he?
He does, yeah.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
You know, he started the season really, really well. Sort of proving to everybody why there's a few big teams in for him. I remember last time Watford were in the Premier League, there was a couple of big teams sort of sniffing around Sarve, and I think the price was maybe too high at the time. But, you know, he's started really, really well again. He played well last week as well, I remember. I actually wouldn't be surprised to see Sarr go into a top six club at some point, maybe at the end of this season.
I think it would have to be for money, because I believe Watford bought Sarr for, I think, the sum of 40 million, coming off the top of my head. So the reluctance to sort of resell, maybe proving in that price tag, maybe Sarr was bought for a player for the here and now and for the future of Watford as well. But unless it was a significant sum, I'm not sure they would be overly keen to sell him on. Because he has been linked away for a long old time, linked to Liverpool heavily.
Yeah, I remember Liverpool interested in.
I think the most exciting part about this game was the fact that it's the first time in Premier League history, or I think English football history, that we've had an overseas ref take charge of a game. Australian.
Gillett. Sorry. That was
about seven yellow cards as well, didn't he?
Probably the most entertaining part of the of the game. Actually, did you see where he got the? Because obviously he hasn't like dealt with VAR properly before. Did you see where he got there was the disallowed goal? I can't remember who it was for. I think it was for Watford.
So he has dealt with VAR to clear, but not in the current form as it is in the Premier League.
Okay, so he did the thing. So he did like the square for the VAR, and then he pointed to the centre spot to signal that it was a goal. So all the fans started cheering, and then he was like, "Oh no, no, wait, no, it's no, I meant no goal." Like, and then he pointed to the box, and he got like all confused at like what the signals meant. Then, it was quite
I
feel a bit sorry for him there, because you can't give him his debut and not fucking tell him about the new rules.
No, like, I'd imagine they did.
But the thing is, it's the English referees, mate.
Muscle
so you can
memory.
Guarantee the fact that they've gone. You'll figure it out, mate. Don't worry about it.
Like, Dino,
we know the standard of the refereeing in England. The fact that we're having to get Australian refs come over. You guarantee, Mike Dean, Peter Walton, you know how useless they are. I've just gone, don't worry, mate, you'll figure it out. It's not that hard. Like, it's just probably mugged him off the poor camp. It's like his initiation.
I think it's probably a case of muscle memory of what he was doing in Australia. But yeah, I mean, he's a highly touted referee. He was, of course, the subject of the famous Mike Tupp referee project that BT produced, which was extremely well received, and every fan that watched that was immediately in the frame of, "Whoa, why can't we have this all the time?" I would remind them you were watching a sort of like 4-minute video, listening to a guy for 90 minutes. As we all know, in this podcast is something completely different. Although it'd be good for just the VAR decisions if we could just hear a little bit of that conversation. Thoroughly agree with that. Moving swiftly on from this match, don't mind dwelling on it too much. We move to the neutral. Some are calling the game of the season so far the Brentford Liverpool match, 3-3. We'll go straight to you, Jake. You talked about this game in significant detail on the Total Liverpool podcast, which you can go and search up if you are a Liverpool fan or were interested in this match. You can get a more in detailed review, but just sum this up for us, Jake.
Chaotic, I think, is the car crash is another word. I think someone used it. It reminded me, I said it on the other pod, that of Jürgen's early days at Liverpool, where it was just you know, basketball, football, going down either end and trying to outscore each other. But it was highly entertaining. You know, actually, it was one of the few games where we've conceded three where, yes, I was disappointed, but at the end of it, I was sort of gone, well, I actually really enjoyed that compared to the drivel of last season. You know, how bad a season was for Liverpool. It was, you know, even though we didn't get the win, it was nice to just enjoy a chaotic game of football involving Liverpool. But yeah, now I've calmed down.
A lot of teams do just approach Liverpool with that, with a low block, and it's like we're watching the same game on repeat every week.
It's exactly that. It's nice to see someone, especially a newly promoted side, come out and go, do you know what, we're going to have a go at you. And they show that, you know, there's still holes in this Liverpool side to exploit, and I think Brentford, you know, did that very well, and for credit to them for getting a very, very good point.
Yeah, but I don't want to emphasise their point on the lack of Liverpool defending or the lack of quality in Liverpool's defending in as much, because that is my point. I think it'd be extremely unfair to Brentford to nail down. I think Brentford were extremely brave in their attacking movements, although there was few in the game. The ones that they did generate were extremely quality. Their set piece work I thought was absolutely excellent. They were brave in all the situations. It was great to see young Pinnock, who came up from the National League, scoring in the Premier League against Liverpool. And the Brentford fans and the Brentford players are all really enjoying, you know, that lovely stadium, the new hype of being in the Premier League. And, you know, credit to them. And, you know, Brentford were quality in this game and gave Liverpool a really hard game, which we all, as Liverpool fans, predicted a Liverpool.
Yeah, we did.
I want to say, like, social commentators or people who commentate on football regularly, we titled our Total Liverpool episode as our toughest game yet in the lead up to this Brentford game, and it delivered just that, as it was. Adam, do you have any points to add?
Not really. I mean, look, as we said in the other pod, I think it's one of them where, look, Liverpool were pretty poor defensively. Not really necessarily any individual errors. Just one of those games. Like Matip and Van Dijk didn't really look like they'd ever played together before. I don't think Robertson did himself any favors. But I think you have to credit Brentford for this. You know, as you said, we're so used to seeing the same game with Liverpool where it's just playing against the low block, watching Liverpool trying to break a team down. And I think the bravery to come at a team like Liverpool, you know, considering the squad differences as well, like the quality in squads, the bravery they showed and the talent that they showed as well. Like, I mean, he just even referenced it was the offside goal that Tony scored. What a finish. It's probably the hardest chance of the
goal.
Buried it. You know, I thought they were brilliant from start to finish. And I really expect good things from them this season. I think they'll be there or thereabouts, mid table.
Yeah. Long may it continue. Lovely club, enjoying their first season in the Premier League. You do love to see it. We next go to St Mary's, where Wolves got themselves over the line, got the win against a difficult Southampton today. I don't think the Southampton were necessarily bad in this game, and they were slightly unfortunate. A few of their chances did drop. But Wolves finally getting over that line and starting to convert some of their chances. The Raul Jimenez in this game was absolutely superb. The goal scored was extremely, extremely quality. Jake, I'm going to come to you. Thoughts on this match?
Firstly, you know, delighted for Raul Jimenez, you know, from potentially never playing football again and losing your livelihood to coming back and scoring the winner. It's what it's all about, isn't it? It's a sort of happy ending there. And he looks sharp again. He looks really good, back to his sort of old self. But I still worry for Southampton. You know, I watched up until the goal, and then I had to turn it off. But, you know, they're just lacking that killer blow for me. And that's, you know, I think obviously down to Danny Ings leaving, you're missing a striker who's guaranteed 20 goals a season. You're replacing him. You know, I think it's Adam Armstrong they got in from Blackburn. I think he's a good player, you know, and he's a good prospect, but he's not proven in this league like Danny Ings. He's not a Danny Ings type player.
Not a one.
And I just, exactly. And I do worry about their killer instinct or the lack of killer instinct from this Southampton side. And I struggle to see where I don't think they've won this season yet. And I struggle to see where their wins are going to come from. If I'm being perfectly honest, I like Southampton. I think they're a good side, but they're just lacking for me in a lot of areas now. They remind me of, you know, that side that's been pulled apart pretty much to the brink of
what more can you take from them?
There's been a lot of talent in Southampton's team over the past sort of like 5 or 6 years. There's been some quality players in that Southampton side. You know, you're talking top class players. You know, your Van Dijk's, your Manny's, Adam Lallana's, you know, your Ings. Sort of, yeah, Danny Ings, who's just recently departed. The ones that still remain there, your Mayo and James Ward-Prowse are just sort of like trying to make up for a lot of the lack of quality in other areas of the pitch. I mean, I think on goal is still Southampton's joint top scorer at this point in the season, which is a little bit disappointing for them. But I think they will do extremely well to stay up this season. Mm-hmm. I think if they could stay up this season, I would consider that a successful season for Southampton.
Yeah.
Although they did run Wolves close in this game. I think they need a wee bit more quality finishing.
The Wolves keeper had a very good game though. I think it was like 6 saves all inside the box that he'd made from like some good chances as well. I thought they played okay, Southampton. I think just linking back to Jake said it, it's just that sort of killer instinct to just finish off the chance, put some chances in the back of the net. And well, as you said, they ran Wolves close. They could have maybe nicked the draw out of this. And I think it goes, you only have to go back as far as the City game last week. Southampton could have beat City. They just couldn't really, you know, find that sort of killer finish. And obviously, I know they should have had a penalty in that game, but you know, I think they're going to struggle even more than I thought before the season. I had them to go down. You know, if they are going to struggle this much, if this is going to continue and they're going to struggle this much to put the ball in the back of the net, I think they're going to struggle even more than a lot of us previously thought anyway.
Absolutely. Coming on to the North London Derby, which we watched together, which was lovely. We watched it on Twitter Spaces. Maybe we'll do that again and you can come on and talk to us on Twitter. If you don't follow us on Twitter, we're on there and that's probably our most active social media platform, although we're on other social media platforms that I don't know, someone else runs, not me. As I only operate on one social media platform. But this was the worst Spurs the performance I've seen in a North London derby in at least the last 4 or 5 years, at least.
It was certainly. I don't think they've ever been 3-0 down by half time before. No. It was certainly the worst first 45 minutes from Spurs in the North London derby I've ever seen, and it's been that sort of question, hasn't it? You know, it was one of those games where everybody asking, were Spurs genuinely that bad? Or was it Arsenal,
Arsenal
just
good,
being so good? Yeah.
I think it was both.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think when those questions are asked, I think most of the time the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. Arsenal, I think, Simo, we both said it before the game kicked off. This was Arsenal's best lineup. And I think it's the first time we've seen that lineup in terms of all the players being in the correct positions. I think this is the first time we've seen it all season. And what I actually really liked from Arsenal, and I pick out Aubameyang specifically in this, because he's somebody who's not really shown the best of mentality recently. You only have to go back a year in the last North London derby. He turned up to the game late, so didn't even start. That's the sort of mentality he had around just, I think, football in general and maybe where his ego was at as well. But at the weekend, he was challenging for every ball. You saw him winning headers against centre-backs. He looked, I'd go as far to say, he looked like the best we've seen Aubameyang since that the season where he came joint top goal scorer alongside Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah. And I think for Arsenal to have a striker like that, especially if he continues this sort of these performances, and it wasn't just a one-off because it was the North London derby, if they can get him back firing, you know, that's another 15-20 goals a season in that Arsenal team. You know, I think literally with that alone, and obviously, again, with the likes of, we've spoken enough about how good Emile Smith Rowe is and Saka on the other side, and then Odegaard in the middle, sort of linking everything together, I think Arsenal could very easily be the best of the rest. And what I mean by that is I think they could very easily finish fifth place this season. I think Spurs, on the other hand, it's a real mess for Spurs right now. I think, I really like Nuno. I think he's a good coach. He looks a bit out of his depth, just in terms of, I think I referenced it yesterday, how what a mess Mourinho tends to leave his squad
pile of garbage that he normally leaves when he departs a football club.
And it just looked literally after those first 30 minutes, and I mean, I know they were like 3-0 down at that point, but they looked so disinterested. A lot of the players, I think Harry Kane looked genuinely.
Does he
like
even want to play football at this point? He looks so uninterested. Aubameyang, if you compare the two strikers, Aubameyang looked so focused. He was pinpoint focused. He wanted everything. He was timing his runs to perfection. He wanted to challenge his centre backs and let them know he's there. And Aubameyang's not a big man, but he's still there to fight for the shot. It's a derby after all. He's a completely different attitude than the last one, where he was just not interested at all. But Harry Kane I think he had maybe one decent chance in the game, but he's completely at fault for one of the goals.
It was either second or third goal, didn't he? He's just dispossessed.
A hopeless attempt at running back and performing a slide tackle that I can only assume was trying to get him sent off with a red card on purpose, but completely mistimes it, giving Saka essentially all the room in the world to go by him and get one away. We were watching it together. It was lovely. I really enjoyed watching it with you guys. But as soon as that ball broke, I said, that is a goal.
They're going to score,
because it broke into a sort of a three-on-two situation just outside the box. I knew Saka's quality. And another thing I want to mention before I come to you, Jake, is how important it is to put Saka on the right-hand side. It's his best side. He plays his best football there. I know people plaudit Saka for being versatile and being willing to play virtually any position on the pitch. Centre forward, left wing, central midfield, left back, right back. He'll play out anywhere. He'll do it all. That's just him willing to get minutes on the pitch while he's young. But he plays and he does his best work out in that right-hand side. I mentioned it when we used to do the same old Screamers show with a podcast that's now ended called The Same Old Arsenal. Extremely popular show. When I featured on there, I said Saka does his best work on the right-hand side. All the statistics point to that, and he's out there, and he's a level above any performance he performs in any other bit of the pitch. Pepe needs to just accept that Pepe is now the second striker. Yeah. They spent money on him. They got it wrong. Kepa did it. Chelsea did it with Kepa. They just accepted it was a wrong move. It's time to move on. We need to find a solution for this. And I think that's what Arsenal need to do, and just nail down that right-hand side of the pitch to Saka, because he's an extremely fit boy. And I think he's not carrying any injuries at this point. So I think they should be giving him all the experience and all the playing time he could in that right-hand side. I think it's really important for Arsenal. Jake, I'm going to come at you. Some of the derby for us.
Spurs were absolutely dreadful, I think. Do you know, those stats, I think we mentioned them the other week, was, you know, their distance run, I think, so far before this game was, you know, 99 kilometres or something. James Milner runs that every game.
Yeah.
he runs 10 kilometres on his own every game. And, you know, so we're talking Milner in one game against, I think it was Palace, you know, ran a ninth of what the whole Tottenham squad is running combined. And that's, you know, bang embarrassment. And those Spurs fans, you know, we, like I said, we were watching the game together, and to have your own fans leave a derby 20 minutes in just shows how absolutely shambolic you were. Harry Kane didn't look interested. You know, he didn't look like he wanted to be there. He didn't look like he wanted to be on the pitch. Every touch, it was heavy. You know, there was no, like, desire to, you know, he's the homegrown boy. He's the one that's supposed to drive this side.
Captain Fantastic.
Yeah, you know, he didn't look like he could be arsed. Dele Alli was anonymous. I didn't even know he was on the pitch until he got substituted.
I don't know, we might be about to say the same thing. I don't
is
know.
It the Carragher analysis of the positions of the midfielders of Spurs?
No, so I know what I was just going to say. Have
the
you
wish
seen
Rude Hullet?
The wish Rude Hullet.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. That was class.
It was also a bit of analysis on Carragher on the Monday Night Football that stated there was less space in the moon. Less space in the moon. Yeah, the number one is between the central midfield of Spurs. But they pointed out where Højbjerg, Dele Alli, and Ndombele in relation to each other were all over the place, like nowhere near each other. And I understand my point now. I'm a midfield sort of criticism there, but this is the fault of this is Harry Kane. I know that seems a bit simplistic to see it all, but. I mean, they had a point to prove. They started the season without had a point to prove. They played some excellent fluid football. And he come back, stopping about, just like doing nothing on a pitch. He's just a passenger in the most, one of the most important positions of the pitch. And it's just having a tremendous knock-on effect all the way back to the back line. Just
they look
know,
better without him.
Who just and know that
we said they, we said this as well a couple of when they got to the Champions League final, didn't we? When we were chatting, you know, they looked better in that run without Harry Kane, and it got to the final. They started him, and he looked awful. And this season, you know, they beat Manchester City without Harry Kane, and then they put him back in the side, and they just look terrible. And he just does not. He's so disinterested at the moment. It's almost like he's waiting for next summer already. To come around to see if he can get his move. You know, he's talking about how he's worth £100 million, and not on performance.
Yeah, if you've not
like
heard
this,
that,
Harry,
folks, he put that price on his own head on a Gary Neville podcast, saying that £100 million would be a fair price tag. Well, you know, judging by your recent performances, Harry, I think you're way off the mark. I think you need half that, and I think that's still a bit generous. It's shambolic. Nuno is in such a... is in such a tricky spot at the minute. He's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. If he drops Harry Kane, every time there's any sort of dip in form, he'll be hugely criticised and crucified in the media for dropping the golden boy Harry Kane. If he does play him, he will inevitably lose his job, because this Spurs side will not, they're not, from the back, they're just, to the midfield, they just know if they make any sort of effort to move the ball up the pitch, there's just not one, there's not someone interested, there's not someone that's super focused, laser focused at the end of it to put them away. So let's just do our jobs, let's just try to keep it tight, let's just sit in our positions, make our tackles and move the ball in. Let's not try and be like aggressive and you know what I mean, just having Son doing 10 jobs, just have Son doing 10. He's taking a free kick and running into the ball, into the box to try and receive the ball. is the level of Son is trying to carry that team. It's a difficult spot for Nuno. I do not envy that man.
It's a job.
Well, I do, because he's a football manager, and I imagine that's incredible fun and stressful. But I don't know, massively envy the predicament he's in at the minute. Boys, we need to finish our show with Crystal Palace Brighton. Finished one each with that sensational equaliser in the 95th minute.
It's all smoke,
from
Neil
Mopay. I'll come to you, Adam. Give us your thoughts on the match.
I'm going to speak more on Brighton in this, just in a general sense. It's really early on in the season. If we're being honest, they're not going to stick around this position. But I think it's really nice, I think, just seeing Brighton finally get their just deserves. Graham Potter's become like the flavour of the month recently. I've seen a lot of Spurs fans already begging for him, and he's not going to go to Spurs. And everyone last season was slagging Graham Potter off, you know, taking the mick out of the whole XG thing. Obviously, Brighton having that, I think it was the highest XG in the league off the back of last season. And now, like I said, he's become flavour of the month, and everyone's, you know, sort of going, oh, you know, look how good Graham Potter's got Brighton playing. And they're playing no different. You know, it's just, they're just finally converting those chances. And we're starting to see them picking up the points that they deserve to be picking up last season. And I think last night was no different. I'd actually argue that Brighton maybe even deserved to possibly nick it. I think in the same breath, you could say that Palace deserved to, because look, on the flip side, I need to admit my wrongdoing so far, because I was very critical of Patrick Vieira. I thought it would be a near impossible task to get that Crystal Palace team playing from obviously how they were under Roy Hodgson, quite resolute, hard to break down. You know, it was always a difficult game going to, especially away to Palace at Selhurst Park. Patrick Vieira's got them playing a very quite an attacking style of football, and he's managed to do it really, really quickly.
In such a short time.
I thought despite obviously the game finishing 1-1, I thought it was a really, really interesting watch from both sides' point of view. And I'm just trying to think. Eze is not, he's not even back yet, is he?
He's not back. No.
He's not. And that's just another. Everyone's speaking about how good Eze was last season in terms of just being that creative spark for Crystal Palace. And I just wonder, once he comes back, playing under this sort of Vieira style of football, can they actually even go up another level? You know, it's obviously remains to be seen, but we all know what a talent he was last season. And I think both teams are going to have a really good season this season. And they are closely matched, and I think the draw sort of it's probably a fair result in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Patrick Vieira deserves all the credit in the world for such a change in philosophy and an incredibly short period of time. You know, he's obviously incredibly unfortunate not to get all 3 points on the night. If you've not seen the Thierry Henry interview of Neil Mopai, go watch it. It's fantastic. It's great to see Thierry Henry back in the studio.
That was my favourite part of it.
Yeah, completely determined to be a manager, but he's just such a good pundit. Jake, do you have any thoughts to add to it?
I just thought it was an entertaining game, to be honest. I agree with Adam. I think a draw was the correct result for me. And I really like Neil Mopay. I think he's a bit of like an old school player. He's such a dick, but like he's really good. Like he just reminds me, like, you know, he's just a bit of a bell end. And like if he's on your team, you want him on your side. But if you're playing against him, you just must be like really wind you up. But you know, as a neutral, I really enjoy
that. Mateo Guendouzi's career at Arsenal, didn't he?
Yeah,
and a spot, yeah. You know, shit housed him all the way to France. I think extremely, extremely entertaining game, and two clubs that are definitely on the rise. Anybody Vieira, watching,
just want to add, I think Vieira's done an amazing job. I was worried about Palace before they announced him, and even when he was announced as manager, I was worried about them. But I think he's done an excellent job there, and if it continues, then they're in for a very good season under Patrick Vieira.
Definitely, I can agree. And if any long term watchers or screamers are listening, they'll remember the times of us praising Brighton. Been quite a fan of the way they play, and seems to be getting their just rewards. So, which is great for them.
I always say, like, if you can play the way that Brighton play and remain safe as that sort of level of club,
yeah,
what have you got to complain about as a fan? Really, like, you're seeing your team play in the Premier League, really entertaining style of football, when all the other teams around you are, you know, sitting to park the bus, the fans never really get anything to get excited about. I think Brighton have got it really good under Graham Potter, and I think we'll see big progression, and as well with Palace under Vieira, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I put into the Screamers chat last night, where did these Crystal Palace fans come from?
Yeah, they're electric.
They're so loud. They sound like the past few times I've watched Selhurst Park, it sounded like fucking prime Dortmund. the fans going absolutely ballistic. So definitely enjoying that attacking style of football. I think Palace need to just do whatever they can to keep Conor Gallagher at the club. He's so important to the way they play.
He
seems like a player that just kind of wants to play as well. I don't think he'd massively appreciate coming into that Chelsea side and only playing every now and then. I know there's some players that would rather be at a big club and play not so much, and there's some players that would just rather play every single week. And he kind of comes across as that kind of player that just prefer to play every week. So I think if Palace offered him a big deal and he believed in the project that Vieira wanted to start, which is ultimately Europe, which he's clearly stated, and the Palace owner's been very, very forthcoming, and that's the ultimate goal for Palace. So there's a chance they could get him, and I think it cost him a pretty penny, but if I was Palace, then that would be my big marquee signing to say we're starting a project here, of something big, was to get the signature of Conor Gallagher on a permanent basis. I just want to finish up, lads. Thank you so much for your contributions this evening.
Thank you very much, mate. Always a pleasure to chat football with you.
Oh, too kind, mate. Thank you very much to our sponsor, Manscaped, for 20% off and free shipping, code SCREAMERS20 at the checkout. Thanks very much for the listeners for tuning in every single week. We appreciate you more than anyone. Until next time, cheery bye.
Find more great shows or join the team at sport-social.co.uk. Sports Social Podcast Network.